It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalan? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, then that's the thing. I hit the button. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is the real cause of all your problems. It's nothing you did, it's the podcast. And we are absolutely willing, in a completely non-binding and not legally enforceable way, to take the blame for all of that.
Yep.
We're sorry.
Tell your therapist.
And there you go.
The therapist should really know. We send out a mailer and everything.
Yeah. It's part of the curriculum for getting your certification now.
Right.
In several states. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 192.
And if it sounds weird to you, that's because this is a Sunday, not a Thursday. Does it sound like a Sunday? We have a scheduling thing coming up this week, so we just decided to do this one early on the weekend.
The air just seems different.
Yeah, it's daylight. That's part of the freaky part. You look weirder than I had realized.
Yep.
Now that the sun is shining. Anyway, for those of you who've never joined us before, buckle the hell in. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Cool people, good people, all the right people. Email that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little tidbits. Questions, comments, topics, things like tidbits. That. Do you know that tidbit is an Americanism, and the original term was titbit, and that's what they'll still say in Britain, but Americans can't cope with the concept of tit, so it's changed to tidbit. Seriously.
That's an interesting tidbit.
Yeah. Also an interesting tidbit, depending on where you are. Now, I don't know where that term comes from, but...
Small bit, probably.
Well, I'm just wondering, something like
trivial, like a crumb. Well,
a tit's a kind of bird, so maybe it's a bit for...
That's a very small bird.
Yeah. So maybe it comes from the bird.
It's possible.
But I don't know. Anyway, people give us titbits. We're not the only podcast like that.
It's probably a trivial amount, and so it stands in for the trivia. Like, you know, we call it trivia sometimes. Tidbits. What were you saying?
I'm not sure I can remember. People write into the hat with these things.
Yeah, these things.
And the hat, on its own, magically transmogrifies these little tidbits into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its semi-conscious servants, draw them out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. And the show only survives if you awesome people, keep writing in. So you need to do that. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. You need to write there with questions, comments, topics, stuff for us to talk about. Because without that, we will still totally have stuff to talk about, but the entire premise of the show will be gone. And that will be weird, and we'll all feel awkward about it. So help us keep up the facade, won't you?
Because pulling things out of the hat isn't the whole show.
It's frequently not much of the show.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it's the only reason William does it. So write in, or else it'll just be me talking all the time.
Uh-oh.
Get ready for that. You hold on to your butts.
You shouldn't have promised that.
So, how was your 3 days?
Kind of weekend, I guess you could say.
Yeah, how was your weekend?
Well, you know, not a lot going on. I think I talked last time about how we were playing Darksiders or whatever.
Oh, yes.
That's still pretty interesting. I don't know. if we're going to get the second one or not. I mean, we're playing the first one. So that's like a four-year-old game. So there's a second one. Is there a third one? There's just going to be a third one.
I believe there's just a second. I don't know anything about a third.
Oh, okay. So, but that's, you know, not a lot's happened since Thursday. What about you?
Not much here either. As I may or may not have commented at the time, I wasn't feeling super well. So it kind of sucked, actually. We were supposed to go see family this weekend, and I didn't. I felt I could have gone. I just basically would have laid in bed the whole time and not seen anybody. And honestly, my bed's more comfortable than the guest bed, so it felt silly.
Yeah.
So I stayed here, but I really felt bad because we haven't been to visit in months. So I haven't seen them in a while, and so it kind of sucked. But so the producer went and hung out with them and went and saw the movie Big Hero 6.
Oh, yeah.
And I stayed here and I slept and occasionally woke up and ate and then slept again and played some Fable 3, and that's about it. It was a really fairly uninteresting time.
How are you feeling now?
Better. I'm feeling a lot better. I still have this sinus issue, but the general sort of sick feeling is pretty much gone.
How did the producer like the film? I heard quite a few good things about it.
The gist of what I've gotten so far, I believe you know how bad I am at thinking what the producer thinks of movies. It was okay.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to get her to compare it to other ones, other, like, kids' movies. She doesn't remember Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. We weren't even going to discuss trying to compare it to Despicable Me. I eventually settled on Frozen, and she thought it was about on par for her. Now, this is, again, for her. This is not... We're not evaluating it as a kids' movie. We're how much she enjoyed it.
Okay.
And it is based off of a Marvel comic.
It is?
Yes, it is.
Hmm.
It is a lesser-known title that somebody picked up, and actually it has crossovers within the title with a couple of other Marvel people that can be in the movie because currently those are licensed out to, I forget who, but somebody. Whoever's got the X-Men franchise right now has okay. these.
Okay.
So yeah. So they weren't in the film, but I don't know if I'll go see it or not. Probably not.
We'll probably wait.
I would have at the time, like had I been there this weekend. Sure, I was planning on it, but
sure.
I didn't watch any movies. Watched a lot of Hardcore Pawn.
Now, that TV show. Was there a Constantine on Friday?
There was, and we just watched it like 2 hours ago.
Oh.
Still like it.
Okay.
Good. Still very pleased. Are you officially out?
Yeah, we didn't watch the second one. Oh, that's another thing we did. We watched on Netflix streaming the series Salem.
Oh, the WGN one.
I don't know who made it.
It's all the witches and yeah. As near as I can, all I can really tell about that is it's trying desperately to be one of those softcore porn premium cable shows while being on a basic cable channel, so it can't technically show anything.
There are some episodes that are like that.
Yeah. I've heard jokes that it's just an hour long of thinking, even though it's WGN, you might see boobs at any second, but you never quite do.
Yeah, that's not my experience watching it, but I mean, yeah, there is a little bit of that, yeah. But for the most part, not really. It's the thing is, one of the executive producers, never remember that guy's name, but he's done other things that we like. Like he was an executive producer on Voyager and something else. I don't remember.
Rick Berman or Brendan Braga.
Braga.
There we go. Yeah. Those are the two Star Trek producers that like didn't die off. So I always know their names.
So anyway, but it was the only serious problems it has, as far as I can tell, is you know, it's set in the. In Salem in the late 1600s. And, you know, when people write dialogue for that period of time, sometimes they do an okay job, and sometimes they don't do a very okay job. Or when actors are attempting...
What is thou referring to?
Or when actors are trying to speak good, the dialogue. Good sometimes fellow. Sometimes it's okay, and sometimes it's not okay.
Surely thou ravest utmost in this magic box show, forsooth.
So there's that. But they've got anyone who's familiar with, and this is supposed to be Salem around the time the witch craze was going on. So if anyone knows anything about that, then they know there was a slave by the name of Tituba who had a big role in all of that, and she's in the show.
And it's important because there are not a lot of good roles for black women out there, so Tituba is a very important thing to keep casting to give those actresses
anyway,
work.
Sometimes she seems to be trying a very somewhat subtle Jamaican accent, and sometimes not so much, and it's really hard to tell what's going on there, but stuff like that is in the show, and it's kind of okay. And then all that stuff you were just talking about where they try to make it steamy or something, it doesn't really work. You know, you can tell, oh, this is something they're doing not really to enhance the story, but just to get more viewers or something.
I heard that in the original pilot, Tituba was played by Betty White.
Shut up.
But they couldn't get her on contract.
But otherwise, it's actually not that bad, especially if you watch it all at once, you know. I mean, it'd be harder if you had to wait a week. You see a show, and maybe it's not so good, and you're thinking, I don't even care what happens next. But when you watch it all at once, you kind of forget those stinker shows, you know.
Have you watched Manhattan?
I don't even know what that is.
Manhattan's a show that TBS just made that's basically all about the people living in Los Alamos working on the secret project near the end of World War II.
That might be interesting.
I have zero interest in it, but I've heard it's decent, and more important for you, it has a guy in it who is local around here. He was in the local high school theater and stuff around here, who is on a few shows now, and this is one of them, in which he specifically plays a kid from Iowa. So it's all kinds of Iowa loving in there, so you should check that out. No, I have a couple of coworkers. Our married couple, and they run a youth theater troupe around here, and so he's one of their old performers.
Well, I'd be interested in that story in any case, actually. So, well, but I haven't even heard of it.
Yeah, is it TBS or is it it might be Reels, one of the less significant basic cable channels.
Okay.
Has it. They're trying to make their own crap now. Yeah. I got nothing. Really, a lot of sleeping.
Well, we could just go right to that then, maybe.
That makes sense.
Okay, let's do. That is why people listen. They don't really listen to hear us.
So jabber, you love to say.
Jabber back and forth.
Oh, well, I've had sex since we last talked.
And we didn't really need to know that.
No, in Fable 3. I've had sex now 4 times with 3 different people, and I'm married. I'm married, and she's very sweet and nice.
Very sweet and nice.
She is. She's sort of one of the first people who was into me, and she's a little bit of an older lady, but I'm okay with that. She's very nice. We live in a little house. We haven't adopted a kid yet. I'm thinking about it, though.
What's your favorite non-DC or Marvel, not Marvel or DC, comic series? Your favorite?
Way to narrow it down.
So it can't be DC or Marvel.
So Dark Horse or Image, basically.
That's a good question. I wish I...
In terms of series, I've basically not read any series outside of there. In terms of things I own that I've enjoyed, although I haven't purchased them, they've all been gifts, was Frey, which I believe was under Dark Horse, which is a science fiction 200 years in the future sequel to Buffy. That's a standalone graphic novel that I like. And most of the Firefly and Serenity comics. I have most of those. Is Y outside of I thought Y was a Vertigo.
I don't know.
Okay, well, if Y the Last Man is not under Vertigo, then yeah, that would count. A lot of Brian K. Vaughan stuff. And I think The Invisibles is under one of the major labels, too.
So, yeah, that's part of the problem with a question is there's a lot of other titles that are DC, technically DC and Marvel.
Yeah, most of the stuff I tend to enjoy is under Vertigo.
I don't think, I mean, I wish I could say I had.
I was just attacked by a microphone.
Your microphone, yeah. I wish I could say I had read a lot of independent titles or other things outside
so
of...
So do I, because then in this question
would be a lot more interesting. But, well, and I just know there's a lot of good stuff out there. I mean, when my brother comes into town, we almost always go to the comic book store, and I see all this cool stuff, and I think, you know what, maybe I'll start reading this, and then I don't. But I get that way about all fiction, really. I think, hey, this might be interesting, and then I just never do it. I don't get really motivated to...
I feel that same way about creative goals.
So I'm afraid I don't have any answer to that.
Do you know what I saw this morning? Because apparently it's a thing now. On Sunday mornings, Independent Film Channel runs just a marathon of Batman. The old Adam West show.
The 66 Batman?
It's very... which had 120 episodes, apparently.
It's about to be available on Blu-ray and DVD for the first time. All these years, it's only just now getting available for people to own.
Watching that has been very interesting. I've been trying to figure out, because there's lots of... some of the sort of controversy associated with that is whether or not people believed it was supposed to be serious original. Like, there's a constant argument that happens on the internet and throughout the world where people say, man, that Batman show was terrible. It was all corny and cheesy. And somebody's like, you know that was the point, right? I'm like, what, really? So I'm sitting here trying to figure out, because as a kid I saw it. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it was out, I was not alive. But years later, I would see it as a child. And I'm like, what did I think? And I realized that it sort of didn't come into the picture, but in my mind, basically, it was another cartoon.
Yeah, exactly.
And so...
that's right. Like a live-action cartoon.
You don't sit around going, is a cartoon real or not?
No.
On a certain level, you know it's not because it's drawings.
Yeah.
But on another level, you take it to heart very seriously.
Yeah.
And I don't think my little kid brain processed it any different because it was live action.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think that was true for most kids who watch it and like it.
Because, like, I don't remember thinking, wow, this is stupid, but I don't remember thinking this was, like, a real thing happening either.
Right.
And it would be hard-pressed to. I'm finding it hard. I feel like the people who think it was just a dumb show were kids when they saw it, and I remember, because I'm looking at this and I'm like, there's, I mean, even the guy who made The Room wouldn't, like, think he's being serious and have this be the result. Like, there's just so much weirdness.
Yeah.
That doesn't... although, interesting things, because this comes up every once in a while. This is one of those facts you probably don't know, but now we've all heard it so many times that we do. About how the color red doesn't do anything to a bowl.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because they're actually colorblind, and it's just the movement that does
sure,
it.
Sure.
I learned this, I mean, for like the 12th time or whatever, in an episode of Batman today. There was a thing with stampeding cattle stock footage and them being tied up, and he freed himself at the last minute and he took off his cape and hung it out like a matador's cape, and so they all went basically around them. And Robin gets up and he's like, oh, thanks for the da-da-da-da, holy whatever. And he said something about how I thought it would have to be red. And he explained, no, the bulls are in fact colorblind and it's just the movement that gets them. And he says something about holy Toreador, Batman. He says, actually, the word is matador. Toreador just came up for whatever that opera is. Like, I forget what it was called, but he said, like, that was a convenient adjustment of the word so it would fit for this opera. And he's like, oh, holy matador. He's like, quite apt. And they went on, and I'm like, wow, it's kind of educational, too.
It kind of is.
In a totally useless way, but...
still, I mean, that's one of the things I liked about it growing up was... you really got that detective angle. You know, when he was up against the Riddler, and there were actual kind of somewhat interesting and challenging riddles for a kid anyway. It's like, wow, this is kind of neat, thinking through this and stuff. Now, when you get older, you're mostly entertained by all the silly stuff that they surely put in there on purpose. I mean, there's no way
they
didn't.
Much like with Super Friends, the Bat Computer is just God. Yeah. Like, the Bat Computer just solves anything.
Just tells you whatever. They just, ask a question and it answers.
this one, Diamond, I think was her name, had used a potion on Batman and she was going to marry him. But then his lawyer came in with his current wife, who had been abandoned, and they had the certificates and everything, and the lawyer, of course, is Alfred, and the wife was Dick Grayson's aunt or whatever who lives with them. And it was, and it turned out that all the documents had been forged by the Bat computer because it was that good. And Alfred even said, like, how amazing that thing is.
Well, you know, in the early film serials, the Bat computer was pretty amazing also. But, yeah, I think the
66... Super Friends, you just had a conversation near it and then hit a button, and it spit out a piece of paper that solved the whole episode.
Yeah, I think the 66 Batman is great. I don't know if I'm going to go buy it or own it or anything, but when I have an opportunity to watch them, I do. I think they're awesome.
I also went to find out if Burt Ward ever did anything afterward. So I'm like, he had to earn a living somehow.
Yeah, I don't know.
He didn't do a lot. He did a little bit. He's done some voice acting, and he's done a lot of stuff as himself. Hmm. But I'm like, at that young of an age, being like that, can you live off of that? Can you live off of...
For the rest of your
appearances
life?
Appearances as the Boy Wonder or the dude who played Boy Wonder? Like, I'm frequently fascinated by Los Angeles's economy, basically. I'm always... Because everybody is, like, just barely making ends meet in show business, whether they're successful or not. Like, and they can be quite successful, and you see them on television, and they have things, and they still, like, don't have a lot of money, it seems. Or you can never have heard of them doing anything since 1966, and what they did was not that big, and somehow they're earning a living.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very weird.
It is very weird. Works.
Thanks for your question, Anonymous.
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I didn't have very much to say.
No. So yeah, our favorite non-DC, non-Marvel thing is Batman. By two problems with that, the least of which is that it's DC, the most of which is that I don't like Batman.
Although sometimes I think the Batman you don't like is the modern jerk Batman. I mean, I say modern. It's been that way for 30 years, but...
Yeah, I don't like the other Batman either, though. But yeah, The dark Batman...
Who's a jerk to everybody.
Well, but I'm even okay. I mean, I'm still liking Constantine. Constantine's the consummate asshole.
No, I suppose.
Although I will say, watching Constantine, there's so much overlap with Felix Caster, and there's so much overlap with Dresden Files... And, oh, there was something else that I was like, there's so much overlap with that. I can't remember now, but...
Similar source material, in a way.
Oh, there was some stuff... Well, I learned... He used a wee bit of thaumaturgy that I actually knew from the Vampire Roleplay. Oh. I'm like, I've heard of a Hand of Glory!
Same source material, basically.
Yeah, Anne Rice novels. another anonymous... I've been getting a lot of these lately. You're totally welcome to be anonymous, people, but remember, even if your email is dudethisistotallymyname@gmail.com, like, I'm not going to... The hat will not print your name on here unless you have placed it within the body of the email.
Yeah, because that's all it puts on is what you've written.
And it's careful about anonymity. It doesn't want any confusion, so you have to be explicit about it. So if you don't, unless you're Mark... because the hat and Mark have a deal about that. His name always goes on there.
That's kind of weird.
Mark's kind of weird, so it's fine. Anyway, the rest of you, it's going to come up anonymous unless you say, which is totally fine. Or you can, you know, make up pseudonyms or whatever. Just every once in a while, I feel like people may have accidentally done anonymous. I probably should read it. It's pretty short, so.
He kind of put it down like he was done with it. And he didn't even read it.
Who was your first hero?
Hero.
Yeah, we're running into a lot of similar ones lately. Because we had the what's your favorite that's not DC, what's your favorite Marvel, and then we had who do you admire, that kind of thing. So now we got hero.
Well, that's an interesting one because, you know, when it comes to... When I was growing up, this question came up actually quite a bit. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. In shows, like... after school special, whatever. It was all, who's your hero,
that's
you know?
What a hero does.
Or write a paper on who your hero is, or some weird thing like that. And I have to say, during all the time this question came up, I had no idea how to answer it or what it would be. I mean, and after a while, I figured out what kinds of things you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
Like your dad or your mom or your big brother or the president, you know. But I never did understand that, because to me, a hero was someone who maybe rescued you from something or who protected you from something. And I suppose my parents, I didn't look at my parents and ever think the first and primary role that they had was to protect me from something, because I never felt like I was threatened by anything. So, I don't really know how to answer that question, although I do respect a lot of people for the sacrifices they make for others, like, soldiers, police officers, and firemen and stuff. I mean, I remember after 9/11, it got really kind of fashionable to celebrate people like police officers.
It's still a thing now. If somebody mentions it, you kind of have to say thank you for your service.
Yeah,
you
look like police officers. And, but I mean, that's the way it always was when I was growing up. I mean,
well, you grew up in Pleasantville.
Actually, I grew up about 10 miles from Pleasantville.
Oh, Jesus, that's true.
Actually, my first home was in Pleasantville for 2 months. For the first 2 months of my life, I lived in Pleasantville,
Iowa.
But
he's not wrong. No. That's a real place, and he grew up right near there.
Yep.
That explains it. I'm pretty sure William didn't experience color until he was like 12. I don't mean in his TV, I mean in the world.
But those types of people, that probably goes without saying. But, you know, in terms of like a personal hero or someone, and that there have been people that I've admired since and that do things that I find really cool. Like, I think I mentioned on here, Sir Guido, when he was making those videos and he was trying to lose weight. I thought that was really great.
Congratulations, Sir Guido. You're William's hero.
But
not his first.
He's my hero, but not my first.
But I don't know if there's anybody I would say is, I don't know. I've never quite been able to relate to that when people say so-and-so is my hero. I get if you admire the person, especially if I admire them too, but your hero, your personal, like they saved you from a burning building hero. I probably just overthink it.
I think you do. I think you've drawn already too much into it.
But that's the way I've always seen it my whole life. So
that to me. In my mind, I think of heroic as the whole larger than life. And the sort of the attitude they can do no wrong, which I had a lot of when I was a kid. A lot of it was on TV. I think my mom probably qualified as one of my heroes early on. I was way into... One of the first ones I can remember thinking was just such a badass was Bruce Boxleitner's character on Scarecrow and Mrs. King. Totally wanted to be that guy.
Okay, now, so like a person you'd put on a pedestal, kind of?
Yeah. That
it's still
in your mind basically has nothing wrong with them. And the problem with that always is that over time that never holds true. I still get a little bit of hero worship sometimes when I meet the right kind of person and we become acquaintances and I just think they're so awesome. But nowadays I know it's coming, and sure enough I know them long enough and I know that there's something wrong with them.
I can't even remember.
You probably fell under that category for me in the early days. Little did I know what a mess you are.
That's hard to believe. I
it's kind of hard for me to believe at this point.
It's hard for me to... I mean, even my parents... Like, my parents didn't always get along very well. For as long as I can remember. So... I mean, that sort of stays in the forefront of... I knew they had issues. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. In my household, those issues were generally fights that I was in another room for, but were loud enough to hear. And they usually involved my dad yelling and my mom crying. So you'll note I didn't list my dad on my list of heroes, because I knew he was capable of yelling and being really mean. But in my mind at the time, mom was totally the victim in all those, because she was the one crying.
Yeah, I guess.
And so mom was still awesome. And it wasn't until I got older and mom had to, like, intervene in me doing whatever the hell I wanted as a teenager that she lost her heroic status for me.
But, I mean, the fights that my folks had were, they were pretty equal. I mean, it wasn't mom crying while dad was yelling. There was plenty of yelling going. Neither, but no one was crying at all.
Oh, no. And there was always the same.
And they were sort of yelling at each other. And it didn't, it wasn't one of those things where I, as a kid, felt like scared or traumatized by it. Because,
oh, I did.
Because we, us kids fought too. So it just seemed like, okay, well, adults fight and kids fight.
No, I
and
totally was traumatized every time.
And
I guess part of that may be that it didn't happen that often.
No, and it didn't happen that often for us either. But it happened enough that I can remember it far enough back that I don't remember ever thinking my parents were beyond reproach or would never do anything bad or anything like that because, you know, they were just normal human beings like everybody else. So that's another part of it is I've never been prone and kind of in our household, the way we were raised, never prone to really put somebody up on a pedestal because, well, I don't know. I mean, why do that? I mean, a person can be, you can really admire a person and think they're really cool without thinking they're better than you, I guess, maybe, or maybe that's part of it is, as we've often talked, my upbringing, or at least for me personally, I don't know if the other kids in my house would say the same thing, but I don't recall there being very much instruction or whatever in terms of status. Like I've never really understood people having different status. Some people are better than others. Some people are worse. And of course I'm privileged as a white middle-class male. So I didn't often face anyone trying to make me feel like I was less. Or if I did, it didn't register because I just wasn't programmed that way. So, you know, one thing that's been really hard for me over the last several years has been to understand that status is very much how everybody else thinks. I mean, you know, most people I know or and have experienced, whether I realized it or not. So, you know, like the whole thing with my job reviews, and I told you that one thing they always told me was I spoke over people's heads and everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I didn't understand that was because I didn't understand what they were really telling me was that you are operating in an environment where everybody is measuring their status up against everybody else. And when you use certain words or, you know, try to exercise a larger vocabulary, people think you're trying to tell them that you're a higher status than they are. But I didn't even understand any of that when it was told to me over and over again. That's only recently I figured out, oh, that's what was going on. So my parents didn't ever prepare us to go into a world where status was a big deal or where people are going to size you up according to status or where people are going to think you're sizing them up according to status no matter what you say or do. And so, you know, that ignorance has really been a problem for me most of my life.
When you were a little kid, did you wear a lot of ties?
No.
I imagine you going around in a little jacket and like a bow tie or something.
Why?
Well, because you clearly, like from age 2, I believe, when you had a frank discussion of mortality, were just the little rationalist scholar just constantly. So you always just stood back and had a grasp of the reasonable and rational of the situation.
No, no, no.
I don't have any of this. Scarecrow from Scarecrow and Mrs. King was my hero, and I'm the normal one.
No, you are normal. But
I'm always amazed by this.
But you have to
My parents, I totally had a concept that they were, no, my parents were gods to me well into my years.
Well, I respected them, obviously, my whole life. I still do. You know, whenever they told me something, it was almost always right. But it didn't make them perfect, you know.
Yeah, no, when they told me something, it was always the truth. Like, could it come from God truth when they told me something?
It was
a big deal for me when I finally discovered, and I think I was about 20, some issue. Of course, it was a big deal. I now can't remember what it was. Something I was going to vote differently than them on.
Yeah, you've talked about that.
That was huge to me.
But you didn't have a particularly religious upbringing either.
I had zero religious
upbringing. Well, we had a religious upbringing, and in that upbringing, it was something that was made quite a big deal out of was that God's your hero, and nobody else. Not your parents, so your first not your hero siblings, was God. Not your, in a way, I guess you could say that, but first and only ever, in a way, because that was it. Everybody else was just a regular person. Maybe they were a really cool regular person. Maybe they were a really smart person.
You're no God, but you're all right.
But there's a lot of nuance here. I mean, you can really admire someone and think they're great. You're just not going to think they're better than you because not.
And all those nuances exist for me now that I'm a grown-up.
Here's an example.
They did not as a kid, but they did for you.
Here's an example.
Because you had your little bow tie and little jacket.
Here's an example, okay? I've talked about this before.
Near Pleasantville.
At some point in time,
black and white.
The Pope came to Iowa. I've told this story.
I think so.
And, you know, my uncle said, well, you know, he's no...
Pope came down to Iowa. He was looking for a soul to steal.
He's no...
He said...
More, you know, religious... I don't remember what he said. Religious...
That was hilarious. Did you not even pause for that? That was hilarious.
Anyway, my
Pope
point
came down to Iowa for devil went down to Georgia. Come on. Awesome.
The thing is...
I want to write that.
Status is taught. You learn it. And it's just not something that my family taught us. In fact, they taught us the exact opposite. They taught us everybody... You have God, and then you have everybody else. And that doesn't mean some people aren't smarter or stronger or whatever, and that doesn't mean you can't admire those qualities, but don't think that makes that person better than you because they're not. And they're not worse than you either. So, you know.
If your upbringing was similar to William's as a child, please write on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, because I don't think you exist. And I would love proof of your existence.
I think a lot of people are probably raised that way, or at least were. Come on. You know what? I grew up in the 70s. Okay, I grew up with, not only were my parents teaching me this, but my teachers were, Sesame Street was, The Muppet Show was. There was a lot of things out there, a lot of media that was teaching this basic lesson.
I don't know. I saw those same Sesame Street and Muppet episodes.
Not so much about God should
Big
be your
Bird
hero.
Might have been a hero of mine.
But the notion that everybody is equal, you know, nobody's... people, everyone's different, but no one's better or worse than anybody else.
Have you ever written a fan letter?
No.
I've written exactly one.
I've never even been moved to write a fan letter.
I've been moved many times. I've only done it... Well, okay, I say I've only done it once. Technically, I did it twice. One time, it was a school assignment, and it had to be down to the authors of... This was in a reading class I did where we would read Newbery Award winner books.
Okay.
And you had to write to the author of one of those. So I wrote to Robin, I forget what, who wrote Hero in the Crown. Never heard back. Whatever. I feel like that doesn't count, is what I'm saying. I wrote an actual fan letter, like, for no reason, just because I thought they were awesome. One time. It's to an actor... I'm guessing none of you know a stage actor by the name of Derek Lee Whedon. He was a pretty big shot at the Ashland, Oregon Shakespearean Festival. And he was there for many years. For all I know, he could still be there. He also could be dead. I'm not sure. I haven't Google stalked him in a while. But I saw one of my first... performed Shakespeare plays, and it was Romeo and Juliet, and he played Mercutio, I believe, and I just thought he was amazing. And so I wrote him a letter, hand wrote him a letter about how amazing he was. I was probably 10, 11, maybe 12. I was very young. And he quote-unquote wrote back. What he did actually was he signed 8x10 glossy that he had and mailed it to me.
Oh.
But he was one of those actors, so it was an 8x10 glossy stapled in all four corners to a copy of his resume. So on the back was all the things he'd been in. And I thought that was so cool, and that was up in my house for so long. I loved that. I'm sure I still own it somewhere, but it hasn't been put up on a wall in a while. And he was totally my hero. And Mom and Dad were way into it. We went back and we would seek out plays he was in. There was a production of Pericles, Prince of Tyre, where he played Pericles for the first half. Pericles gets older, so in the middle they switched to, like, an old guy or whatever. But, yeah, I totally worshipped him. I thought he was amazing. Only fan letter I've written. I've wanted to write, I've thought about writing many before, including several different ones to Will Wheaton that I never did. That was the only one I actually did.
Yeah, I've never really been moved. I mean, you know, I met Marion Ross.
Actually, I take it back. Just the other day, I sent a direct message to Jen Sprague on Twitter telling her how much I liked her profile picture. That might technically count.
I met Marion Ross in Moscow, remember?
I remember, you. Next to the crazy-ass Coke machine.
And, you know, I was excited to see her, and she was excited to see us, and I got a photograph, but I wasn't...
so many great leads.
But I wasn't, like, starstruck or anything. It was like, oh, hey, cool, Marion Ross, you know? Here we are in Moscow.
It's because you're such an asshole.
No, it...
I would actually be pissing myself if I met Marion Ross...
No, you wouldn't.
Anywhere.
No, you wouldn't.
Let alone... Well, at this point, I think she's dead, so yeah.
No, she's but, not.
We've had this...
I don't think she is.
Is Barbara Billingsley dead?
Okay. She died some time ago. All
right.
But,
No, but especially really if I'm just in Russia and then there's just goddamn Marion Ross, I would lose my mind.
The only situation I think of where I would have a difficult time expressing myself when I met someone was if it's someone who, you know, here I'm in their presence and I'm going to be for like 2 minutes and there's something I would really like to say to them to show my appreciation, but I don't know what. But it's not so much a starstruck thing as like, oh, I wasn't prepared to really say what I wanted to say.
I was too scared to speak to Alan Thicke when I was standing 5 feet away from him.
I wouldn't have anything to say to Alan Thicke.
I had so much to say to Alan.
Really?
Not all of it necessarily positive.
I mean, what I would want to say...
Actually, I believe while in Ashland one time, I walked right by Derek Lee Whedon and I was too like nervous to say anything.
What I usually want to say to someone who's famous is something that they did that I liked, you know.
What did Marion Ross do that you liked?
Well, I liked everything that she did, everything she was in. But, you know, Happy Days is what we watched, and that's what we really liked her in the most.
I was going to say, nobody comes to her for other stuff.
Sure they do.
Nobody's like, I really appreciated
something other than Happy Days. She said in the documentary, in the documentary I Know That Voice, that she gets people coming up appreciating her. She does SpongeBob SquarePants mom or something.
Oh no, that would do it then.
And she gets that for more than anything she's ever done.
That would be huge. She also was Red Foreman's mom on That 70s Show.
Oh, I didn't know.
And she was terrible, and then she died.
Oh, that's awful.
Well, actually, that was part of the episode. Was Eric was driving his mom to the airport, and he actually said to her, because he decided he was going to stand up to her because she's so mean to his mom, said it wouldn't kill you to be nice every once in a while, and then she died. And he spent the whole episode dreading that, and his father was having a real hard time with it, and he finally confessed it to his dad, and it made his dad laugh. And he said, only you would have that happen. It was one of the more touching moments on That 70s Show, which is, in fact, the dictionary definition of damning with faint praise, but nonetheless, I appreciated it.
Well, overall, the point I'm kind of making in all of this is that the whole thing about having heroes, that's a cultural thing. I mean, that's not...
And you were not raised in this culture.
Not in a way that would encourage me to worship heroes or to appreciate, you know, our military and police and whatever, yes. To appreciate people who are very talented and very smart, yes. But to put them on some kind of pedestal or to think in a way where they're better than me, no. No, that was...
I had tons of heroes.
That was harshly described.
I don't know that I have any anymore, but I had tons back then. Every member of the A-team. Except for that one Hispanic guy that came in late in the last season.
The thing is, when we were kids, we would play, like, Scott and I would play Batman and Robin or Superman or when Dukes of Hazzard was on TV, we watched that.
Oh, yeah.
And play Dukes of Hazzard.
They were totally heroes.
Now, if pretending you're somebody in play is they're a hero of yours, well, then we did that, certainly. But I don't know if that really counts.
No, I don't think that does count.
And a lot of times we wouldn't pretend we were the person in the story. We would pretend they were them and we were someone else. We'd make up our own characters.
They were like standing next to you and you were hanging out with them.
They were like NPCs. They were NPCs and we were playing our own
characters. I was a little more into that style. Personally, most of the reason I was more into that style of things was frequently you had to have some kind of conflict lines drawn, and if you didn't have NPCs, then the conflict lines were usually between the people, and I didn't ever like that. I always wanted us to be on the same side.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like to pretend that there were other bad guys or whatever.
I did the same thing. I did that too. But occasionally we play, I mean, we literally played when I was kids, cops and robbers and things like that. We would do that.
They were still a novelty when you were a kid.
Shut up. I'm not that
cops
old.
Cops had just been invented.
I'm not that old. But I feel like whenever I tell these stories, the way you look at me is like I live in the 19th century or something.
There's a reason why you feel that. You're a very observant young man.
Whatever.
Here's a nickel. Go buy some moon pies and penny whistles.
Do we have time to draw something?
How do you feel about color? Has it been working out for you so far?
What color?
Only you could say that in this room.
What is this thing that you are calling color?
Only you could say that in the room painted flame creeper.
You mean gray and shades of gray and, mm-hmm. and some black and white?
50 of them. Wait.
Anonymous asks, what is the best thing about our country and what is the worst?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ?
The worst thing about
our
country...
Are you saying Christianity is the best thing about our country?
No,
or the worst thing about our country?
I'm saying the worst thing about our country is everybody obsessed with trying to tell us how awesome it is. Like...
The best thing about our country. Well, this is hard for me because, I mean...
Do you know that patriotism was a 20th century invention?
No.
Yes, there was, or nationalism, such as it is today. Pride in one's nation was basically invented in the lead up to World War II.
But I thought...
Like, before then it was usually based on race, or occasionally by, I forget what, oh, religion was another one. And you would take pride in that. But pride in the actual sovereign was not a thing.
The term patriot was thrown around quite a bit during the revolution, wasn't it? I mean, what did they mean when they called each other patriots?
That's a good question. I don't know, but pride specifically in your nation wasn't a big thing until the 1930s, I want to say.
Here's the thing. When people talk about our country, you know... Naturally, at the very least, they're talking about this geographical thing that's got certain boundaries that is called the United States of America.
I'm with you so far.
Well, yeah, that's something we can all agree on. There are these geopolitical boundaries, and everything within it is called the United States.
America.
As far as I know, after that, nobody can agree on what... our country is. Sometimes people use the same rhetoric and they think they're talking about the same thing, but kind of standing outside that situation, hearing these people talk, I know that when person A over there uses that rhetoric and talks about our country, they mean something completely different than person B means, even though they're using all the same words.
Yep.
So I know that this term our country means almost nothing. It's this arbitrary geopolitical thing, and after that nobody can agree on what it is. So, you know, I have a hard time talking about it because in my mind it doesn't really exist as something you can evaluate quite that way.
Mm-hmm.
As something that has things that are good about it and things that are bad about it, because, you know, as soon as I say, like, let's say I say, well, one of the worst things about our country is its huge debt. Well, is that really something that belongs to our country? Or does that belong to our government? Or does that belong, you know, is that something you can attach to our
country? I thought it mostly belongs to China.
Well, actually,
that's what I heard.
That's an interesting thing that you just said in terms of what America is. Is it the sum of who owns it? Who is owed something? Because people say that what they're trying to imply is that if we owe money to foreign powers, or if foreign powers own a lot of land or a lot of assets economically, then it's not our country. It's partly their country. Just like your car is partly the bank's.
I had a little kid, I think he was Chinese, came the other day, tried to tell me his country had bought my house. I wouldn't give it to him, and he was pretty short, so he couldn't get in.
But see, you don't take out loans for your cars or whatever.
He might not have been Chinese.
But you have a mortgage on this house.
He might have been. I'm not even sure.
Who owns the house? You Dutch. Or the bank?
Trish.
Okay, but you see what I'm trying to say?
I do.
It's probably just like the hero question. I overthink things, but for me, it's important to know what these things mean, or else I can't really answer the question. I'm not sure there can be anything best or worst about our country. There are just good things that happen and bad things that happen. And, you know, I hold people accountable for what they do.
I hurt my thumb. Does it look swollen?
Like, for example, can we really hold the country, this
America,
abstract thing, accountable for the war in Iraq? What does that mean to say that our country is responsible for that?
I thought that was Clinton's fault.
Do you have some opinion about what the best thing or worst thing is about our country?
No, I have the same opinion as you through a much slower and simpler process. I don't feel it's a useful. My issue is less with the word country and more with the word best and worst.
Yeah, I have those problems also. I don't
think those work in the. I mean, there's so many factors that just does, and things that people want to say, oh, this country, like freedom's a big one. People say, oh, I love freedom. Okay, measure freedom specifically, and how does this vary from, say, France or
England? Canada?
Those are technically socialist democrat, which by certain definition means you have less freedom, and they certainly aren't as obsessed with talking about it like we are. So do we have more freedom? In certain lights, yes, and in certain lights, no. And in certain lights, what the fuck? And also keep in mind, Americans are awesome. Do you know why I'm an American?
Because you were born here.
Exactly. Yep,
me too.
The fact that I'm American has nothing to do with my upbringing. Like no matter what kind of kid I would have turned out to be, I'd still be American.
Yep.
So, we're all like that. So, what does that say about Americans? About the same as it says about Germans. Like, it's just... And, I mean, I grew up in this culture. So, yeah, if I suddenly was living in a different country, it might be weird. And I can sit around and say, you know, all other things being equal, what kind of government, society, culture would I like to live in? And the U.S. is pretty high on the list of the ones that are currently in existence in the world. I don't know that it's at the top. Fiscally, I'm fairly socialist, so someplace like Canada or the U.K. might be a better suited government for me, but I'm aware that they also have their problems and that I'm not on the ground there and I can't say.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm immigrating. But that's all I can say, and it's all very theoretical, and it's not a thing. Like, countries aren't, like, better or worse. Countries have their shit going on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's ones I would not like to live in North Korea.
I wouldn't either.
I'll bet you there's something that they actually do better than. I don't know what it is.
Well,
there's probably, even if it's something stupid where, like, much fewer muggings because everybody's too scared to piss off the government. Like, you know, it's still a thing. Like,
right. If someone were to ask me, well, would you ever, do you want to leave the United States? I'd say no. Well, then why? Maybe tell me what that reason is, and maybe that's the best thing.
My stuff is.
Yeah, here. This is because this is my home. Actually, the thing
is remarkably complicated to leave.
Yeah, the things I like most about the United States is not at all about the United States. It's about. No. It's not even about Iowa.
You don't live here for the government.
It's about where I grew up specifically, you know, Franklin Township in Marion County, Iowa, maybe you could say. It's not about Iowa. It's not about the United States. It's really not about a geographical location. It's mostly about people and things like that. So, although I think everybody knows, I do love this place. And I would never want to leave here. It doesn't have anything to do with the United States being great or not great.
No, and it's people just moving to other places doesn't mean they hate the U.S. either.
Although
there was a big rush when I think it was the 2004 election. A lot of people were going to move to Canada.
Yeah.
Now, among those were my parents, and they looked into it. And here's the deal. Unless you have really, really good necessary skills that Canada really wants, it's going to cost you six figures easy just to buy your way in to becoming a Canadian citizen.
I'm not interested.
It's not simple.
Going anywhere else. But here, let me ask you this question, though. You read a autobiography by Craig Ferguson.
I tried not to. Yes. American on Purpose.
Yes. So really, that's the perspective this person probably wants to know about. Not our. We were born here. There's probably a ton of things we take for granted. You know, whatever. Why does a person come here and become a citizen? Maybe that's what we really want to know.
Fuck you then, because Craig doesn't have his own podcast. However, you know who does is Kumail Nanjiani. And he also came here and became a citizen.
But you were impressed by Craig Ferguson's autobiography, as I recall.
I was.
And you told me that when you read it, you actually felt it kind of made you feel proud to be an American a little bit, the way he talked about
it. I remember telling you that. I don't believe I lied.
Well, but you don't remember what it was he
said?
Not
in the slightest.
Oh, okay.
It's not that long, though. It's like 6 hours. I should listen to it.
Here's the thing that...
I'm in the middle of a new Neil Gaiman one.
Here's the thing that John Oliver says about the United States. Which, if this
does this have to do with the inflatable barbecue? Because he says that.
No. And if this is true, then I do think this is a great thing about our country.
Is this the sausage wrapped in pancake on a stick? Because he says that, too.
Because, see, that's another thing. American culture. There surely is a culture in America that's distinct from just about anywhere else. But as someone who lives here, I can tell you that culture is very different when you go to the Deep South.
Yeah, place to place within. Probably true everywhere.
If someone were to say, "Oh yeah, okay," but if you go to the South, for example, it's different than the Midwest, but it's still that they're still more similar than anywhere else. I would even say that's true. I'll bet there are places I could go in England that are closer culturally to, say, where I came from, than the difference between the Midwest and the South.
Certainly, Southern Canada and the Plain States, U.S. are way more in common than
exactly.
Like, the panhandle of Florida.
But John Oliver says, what he often says about the United States, I find interesting, is that Americans have this incredible optimism, like almost to a fault. They're just optimistic about things. And again, I don't think that's something that belongs more to America than anywhere else or just to Americans. But I'd never really realized that might be a little bit true, that Americans are very optimistic about things, that they think that things can work out. He made it sound like where he's from, people are kind of fatalistic. they don't tend to be optimistic like they do in the United States.
I do think the relative age of a nation has an impact. But I can't tell you entirely what that is. But there is sort of that idea that a lot of our views of ourselves as a nation are tied into the fact that we haven't been one for nearly as long as so many others. And especially comparisons with England. Because, I mean, and there is stuff like that. People who consider themselves part of the same people that, you know, conquered the Romans here 1,000 years ago. And stuff like that. And who live in homes that are fifth and sixth generation and stuff, way more. Who find shit in their attic that's from the Victorian era. Who have Roman ruins in their backyard.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and also think about how American culture changed a lot after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a country like England has a lot of 9/11s in its background. A lot of times where, you know, being firebombed by the Germans in World War II. And, you know, just you can just keep going back and there are these moments in the collective memory of these horrible things. And, you know, if those pile up, you might not have this exuberant, you know, almost a naive optimism like a lot of other countries do.
Yeah.
Because even I think what based on other things John Oliver has said, while he admires American optimism, I think he thinks America, it's just like you say, it's like a young person where there's all this optimism, and that's cool, and that's people appreciate it, and it's almost contagious, but that optimistic person is also a little naive, and can be even annoying in how, you know, sure they are of themselves and of what they're doing. And America definitely falls prey to that.
Now that we've ensured that any super patriots who are listening are going to come and try and kill us, we should wrap up because it's that time. Is this the... No. This is the... All right. Shh. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. All right. You... We're not putting this up till Thursday, so you didn't hear this till Thursday, so... I may call this episode Derek Lee Whedon just because I want it to be another hit if anybody ever tries to Google that actor. I think that'd be awesome. If you'd like to write the hat, do it. Do it right now. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. We need you. Without you, it's just me. Think that through. Also, go to the blog, TheMagicalTalkingHat.com, and talk about the stuff that we talked about here so that it can be more of a dialogue and less of a monologue with William occasionally talking. In the meantime, we love you, and America. I'd call it America, but I feel like we already did that one time.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.